Evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Lori, Jesse Bell, Isabella Garrido, Abiyaz Karim, and Jaya Kumar. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist Christina Lori, and here are your local news headlines. In the wake of the coldest months of the year, Homebase Housing has added an additional 10 beds to their In From the Cold emergency shelter. Homebase Housing is a nonprofit organization offering a variety of services, including emergency shelters, transitional housing, and supportive housing. The In From the Cold emergency shelter operates 24/7, 365 days a year, providing a range of supports, including not only a bed to sleep in at night, but also a dedicated case manager to help individuals secure permanent housing. In 2024, In From the Cold housed 64 individuals, moving them from the shelter into housing of their own. In spite of limited resources, Homebase Housing was able to stretch their current means to expand from 24 to 34 beds. This marks a return to the shelter's pre-COVID capacity. This move comes at a crucial time, with temperatures dropping and the homelessness crisis reaching a tipping point, according to the Association of Municipalities of Ontario. A study released last week by the association reported over 80,000 Ontarians were known to be homeless in 2024. An increase of more than 25% since 2022. Municipalities and local organizations have been bearing the brunt of this burden, with municipal contributions making up over half of the funding for housing and homelessness programs across all three levels of government. Amanda Brierly, manager of shelter services with Homebase Housing, spoke with CFRC on the expansion of the shelter and the increasing demand for services. You were able to add 10 new beds to the Kingston Homebase shelter. How was Homebase Housing able to make this possible? What's the story there?
Yeah. So there's a lot of mixed messages back and forth in media and things like that. So just to clear it up and what we've done. So In From the Cold was at 24 beds. We opened 10 new beds, bringing our total to 34 individuals. Pre-COVID, In From the Cold was at 34 individuals. So people are like, no big deal, you were there before. It is a big deal because since COVID, we have a lot more guidelines and restrictions through public health that we need to follow in an infectious disease protocols. And we didn't have those before. And so now we have those to adhere to. And so we're putting more people into a smaller space that then creates more bacteria, more viruses, more things like that. And so it is a big step for us to move up to 34 from 24 individuals. We know the need is out there. We see the need in the community through our street outreach program. And so it was something we were able to do because we did have those beds before. And so it was something we were able to do to try to help fill that need for our community. 10 was the max we could do because that's what we were at before. And like I said, we're just putting more people into a smaller space, which isn't good for anybody. So we feel like we're at our max, but that it is manageable at this point.
Absolutely. And was it additional funds that came in that kind of allowed you to take that step and add those beds back, or how were you able to do that?
There are no additional funds. So Homebase Housing is a nonprofit agency, and so we do rely a lot on private donors, grants, and funding that we apply for. These 34 additional beds, we are doing on our own at this point, in hopes of helping alleviate some of those, not having places to go for the unhoused population.
You alluded to this. It's not as simple as just, well, 10 more people can come in, we're adding 10 more beds. What are those resources, both in terms of, you mentioned you didn't get additional funding for this, but what are those resources that needed to be added in order to accommodate 10 extra people?
Yeah, so I mean, bedding, laundry, food, hygiene, all of that has increased, right? Your basic needs. So, food was our number one. We've seen, that our fridge has looked more bare than it ever has in the last 4 years. But we are fortunate with community partners. Queen Soul Food helps us out. as well as food rescues through the Second Harvest food program. So we're very fortunate that way. But we still do have a need for food. We're feeding 34 individuals three times a day, and we're not receiving additional funding, right? So food is a big resource, as well as just hygiene, you know, making sure that we have shampoos, conditioners, soaps, socks, underwear, all of those basic necessities for people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how did you work with public health in order to add these extra 10 beds as well?
So we've talked about, you know, infectious control and, you know, where we need to be disinfecting or where we can, you know, put up some barriers in between bunk beds and things like that to help prevent any spread. We've talked about cohorting and how we can work when we do have somebody that's unwell in such a small confined area with so many individuals, because we're unable to isolate people. So that's the other thing people don't realize is we don't have isolation. everybody's sleeping in one large room together. And so again, you know, that creates some unsafe situations when we're talking about public health and new infectious diseases. And so just trying to mitigate some of those risks by cohorting people with symptoms and things like that. So that's what we've had to do. It's like I said, it's not been easy, but it's manageable.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah. And like you said, it hasn't been easy, but clearly there's a need. I was wondering if you could speak to the importance of giving this extra support, especially during the winter months.
Absolutely. So we know in the city of Kingston, we have an unhoused population. We see every walk of life come through our doors. Homelessness doesn't happen to just one individual. Our street outreach team is seeing individuals, you know, on the streets, and the need is there. The importance comes from that. It comes from what we're seeing. It's not coming from numbers. It's not coming, you know, from media outlets. It's coming from the direct interactions that our street outreach team is having with individuals on the street. We do know that the ICH used to function at a very much different way previous to September. And now since they've reopened, their space has minimized a bit as well. And so we knew that was happening. So if we were able to help with that need, as well as the closure of 218 Concession Street Warming Center, right? So we knew that was happening. So we knew that there would be a need. So as I said, we saw the need there, and it was how can we help fill that need? And this is what we were able to do.
Once again, that was Amanda Brierly with Homebase Housing on the recent expansion of the In From the Cold Emergency Shelter. That wraps up your headlines for this evening. Next up is Jaya and Abiyaz with Campus Corner, the latest in Queen's campus news.
Hey there, listeners. We have Ms. Linda Henderson with us. She is the Employee Wellness Engagement Coordinator within the Employee Wellness Services in Queen's University, and they have been doing some amazing work. They have an upcoming seminar regarding eating plan for stress management, and we will be talking about. Hello, Ms. Henderson. How are you doing today?
Doing very well, and thank you so much for inviting me to speak to you about our upcoming seminar.
It was our pleasure. So, Ms. Henderson, let's get right to the seminar. What inspired you and the Wellness Center to organize this seminar for us?
So at Queen's University, fostering a culture of wellness is a strategic priority, and this seminar aligns with our intentional data-driven approach to wellness planning. January is an ideal time to focus on nutrition and well-being, as many individuals are setting New Year's resolutions, participating in things like Dry January, or revisiting fitness goals. This session was designed to meet a critical need by providing evidence-based practical tools and managing stress effectively. So stress is very common within the workplace, and at Queen's, mental health accounts for 37% of the medical leave claims, while personal and workplace stress are the leading reasons employees seek assistance through our family and assistance program. So chronic stress is also a significant contributor to the conditions like diabetes, with related prescription claims increasing by 37% from 2022 to 2023. So we felt that nutrition plays a critical role in mitigating the effects of stress and supporting the overall resilience. So during this 1 hour session that we'll be offering, participants will learn how to specific foods can enhance energy levels, boost immune defenses, improve mental clarity. We'll be, offering measures to be able to help with dietary habits and being able to, empower participants to take proactive steps toward managing stress and fostering sustainable habits. So we felt this was a really good opportunity to be able to do that.
That actually sounds like a really good initiative. So you have mentioned that the seminar is mainly focused towards faculty and staff, but I know for a fact that students also undergo a lot of stress, be it academic stress or stress related to their professional work. So can students also participate in this seminar?
They can, although we generally have a focus for staff and faculty, but if they'd like to be part of it, it's just a matter of registering for the course, yes.
Right. So about that, can you talk about the registration deadline and what prerequisites our audience should have before signing up for this seminar?
For sure. So we really have no complete deadline as far as when people can sign up. They could sign up to and including the time of the seminar. So the seminar is taking place on January the 16th. From 12 until 1, and registration for that is done through our learning stream, and it's open to faculty and staff. And if students want to do that as well, you can go to the Queen's Human Resources main webpage, and we have a wellness tab there, and then under that wellness tab there's a Thrive 365 tab, and you can do the registration through there. It's free, and the person that will be actually doing the session for us is a registered dietitian through our Employee Family and Assistance Program. And her name is Leah Shanehouse, and she's one of the facilitators that TELUS uses.
Great. Can you talk a bit about her background, her credentials, please?
And as I said, she's a registered dietitian with the College of Dietitians of Ontario and British Columbia, and she's also a member of the Dietitians of Canada. So she graduated with a degree in Nutritional Sciences, Bachelor of Science, from the University of British Columbia, and then she went on to do her master's degree in human nutrition at McGill. So I think she'll be a great resource for us to be able to learn more about, how we react within an environment when we are stressed and how eating will either help us or not help us in that.
Wow, she seems really experienced. So will there be opportunities for the audience to interact with Ms. Leah?
Yeah, absolutely. When we set up the seminar, we asked her what the format she would like to use, and she said, "Do you want to have question and answer throughout?" So yes, the chat will be a feature where people can do the questions and answers. As well, I think if there are things after the seminar is over, we'll have the opportunity to be able to have those questions sent to her, and she can provide us answers as well.
That sounds great. Thank you, Ms. Henderson, for making the time for us today and talking about this seminar. And that's a wrap for this segment of Campus Corner. I'm Abiyaz Antarib Karim for CFRC News.
Hello, everyone. This is Isabella Garrido, your CFRC sports reporter, coming to you from the CFRC sports desk with the latest updates from Queen's University Athletics. Let's dive right in. First up, the 2025 Carr-Harris Challenge Cup is just around the corner. The Queen's Gaels and RMC Paladins will reunite hockey's oldest rivalry in the 37th Carr-Harris Challenge Cup on Thursday, February 6th at 7:30 p.m. This exciting matchup will take place at Slush Puppy Place. Tickets are now available online or in person at the Slush Puppy Place and Queen's Athletics and Recreation Center. Prices for the general public are $15, and Queen's students, don't forget, 500 free tickets are available at the ARC's Q service desk. Just bring your student ID to claim your ticket or purchase additional ones for $5 each. Dating back to 1886, this historic rivalry is the longest on record. The winner will take home the Carr-Harris Trophy, which features the Lenny sculpture, commemorating the first game between RMC and Queens. It's a must-see event for any hockey fan. Switching over to basketball, the Queens Gales women's basketball team is hosting their annual Shoot for the Cure game on Saturday, January 25th at 4 p.m., also at the Arc. This initiative, led by U Sports Women's Basketball Coaches Association, raises funds and awareness for the Canadian Cancer Society in support for breast cancer research. This event is especially meaningful for us Gales as they rally together for those affected by cancer. Fans are encouraged to wear pink and cheer on the Gales as they take on the Brock Badgers. Currently tied up for first in the OUA Central Division standings with an 8-4 record, the Gales are holding strong in third place at the OUA East with a 10-2 record. Tickets for this important game can be purchased on the Queens Gales Tickets website. Don't miss the chance to support a great cause while enjoying some exciting basketball action. And lastly, some quick updates. Queens men's basketball team is now ranked 8th in the OUA, continuing to show their strength this season. For tickets to see these and upcoming games, head over to gales.universitytickets.com. That's all for today from the CFRC Sports Desk. This has been Isabella Garrido bringing you the latest from Queens University Athletics. Now back to Christina Laurie for your evening weather report.
This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Wednesday, January 15th, we are going to see a beautiful sunny day here in the city of Kingston, but it still will be quite chilly with a daytime high of minus 5, dropping to minus 13 overnight. Thursday, January 16th, daytime high of minus 3 with a 40% chance of flurries throughout the day, dropping down to minus 6 overnight. Friday, January 17th, slightly warmer at minus 2 and cloudy, only dropping down a single degree to minus 3 overnight. Saturday, January 18th, we're going to see a daytime high of 2 degrees, but there is a 60% chance of precipitation, a mix of flurries and rain showers, dropping down to minus 8 overnight. Sunday, January 19th, we will see a daytime high of minus 5 with a mix of sun and cloud. And as we move into the start of next week, temperatures are going to drop again. Monday, January 20th, we'll see a daytime high of minus 9, dropping to minus 16 overnight. And Tuesday, January 21st, it'll be cloudy, with a daytime high of minus 11 and an overnight low of minus 17. This is Jesse Bell with your traffic report for the City of Kingston. Albert Street, Princess to 486 Albert is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Charles Street, Bagot to Rideau is closed beginning January 13th at 7 a.m. to January 14th at 7 p.m. for the installation of a new gas service. Earl Street, Aberdeen to Division is closed until January 17th to support construction-related activity. University Avenue, Union to Stewart is closed January 13th to 14th for a crane lift on University Avenue. Wellington Street, Earl to Gore is closed January 13th to 18th to accommodate service tie-ins. Here are some other delays you should be aware of. Aberdeen Street, Johnson to Earl, expect delays and closures along Aberdeen for a contractor to complete road and sewer reconstruction. Collins Bay Road, Prince Charles / Edwin to Princess, expect delays while a contractor completes phase 2 of the Princess and Collins Bay active transportation improvements. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. And lastly, Sir John A. Macdonald Boulevard at Elmwood. Expect delays while a contractor upgrades the intersection at Sir John A. Macdonald Boulevard and Elmwood Street, including replacement of street lighting, new traffic lights, replacement of asphalt on roadways, and a new multi-use pathway south of the intersection towards Bath Road.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.